Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. This is Trevin McGee with the Scene Stealers podcast, and I'm here today with my good friend Eric Moline.
Hi.
My podcast buddy over at Dad's Big Plan, Alan Rapp.
Hello.
And our new contributor, Claire Rock, is also here.
Howdy.
And we have just one announcement, and then we're going to go right into Rock of Ages, the 80s hair band musical that you wanted. You asked for it, and you got it.
Yeah.
50-year-old Tom Cruise without a shirt on.
There you go.
Enjoy.
Speaking of men without shirts on and inflated cod pieces,
which we tend to do a lot on this show.
A week from tonight at the Beaumont Club in Kansas City is the 2012 Air Guitar Championship Kansas City Regional.
Woo. Tell us more.
I'm not going to tell you too much other than yours truly will be defending his 2011 Kansas City Air Guitar title.
Trevin,
and
you're
you
an Air Guitar
come.
Champion?
That's true. That Call me awesome. Red Dragon.
Yeah. That's it. I told
That's
you it would be short.
Well,
yeah,
good.
Go to the All Beaumont right. Club. It's ridiculous.
Go to the Beaumont Club. I'm going to be the audio-visual wizard.
Air traffic
evening.
Control.
Air traffic control will
right
be me.
To the Beaumont Club.
There you go. You should. You have to
is
come.
Is it free?
It's not free, would it, but it is for you.
It is for me?
Yes. Yep.
Like, do I get a backstage pass?
Sure.
Sweet. I'm literally the neighbor. I live in the apartment complex right there.
Sweet. You won't be able to avoid it then.
So there it is. Next Friday, go to the
yes.
Beaumont Club, air rock your face off. And now we're going to talk about more fake.
Speaking of fake rock
more
and roll.
Fake rock and roll
let's
music.
Let's talk about one of the most fake movies that takes place in a reality that doesn't exist and never did.
But that's it's exactly how I remember to the 80s.
To
I,
be
I don't
fair,
know what you're talking about.
Isn't that most movies, though? Realities that didn't ever
this
exist?
This movie approximates reality in more ways than one. The fact that its soundtrack is made up of 80s jukebox favorites from Night Ranger to Twisted Sister mm-hmm. to Foreigner to Journey.
Sure.
Yet the people in the film have penned some of these songs
mm-hmm.
while wearing T-shirts from the band that actually wrote the songs.
Yes. Let's
yeah.
take a step back.
Okay,
I thought
we were jumping in.
We did.
I'm good
we
to
did
go.
Jump in, but
right.
we have to kind of towel off and explain what's going
we're
on, and then we'll
end.
Go back.
I'm,
to the
I
deep
went
end.
Straight for the deep
we're
end.
I know. The stairs.
Yep.
Yeah, we got. We're going to that floaty rope that they just put off. We're swimming towards that. Rock of Ages is a musical based on a Broadway musical of the same name. And the gist is, it's an 80s hair band musical. It's sort of like the positive spin that I'm sure people will give it is it's like a loving tribute to the 80s. More accurately, I would say it's kind of a cash-in on the 80s nostalgia that runs kind of rampant in our culture right now.
It's a nostalgic look. I don't know if loving is right, but it's certainly a nostalgic.
Yeah. So it's a little, it's a story we've heard 1,000 times, boy meets girl.
Small town.
Yeah, boy meets small town girl.
It's your cookie cutter 80s film, like some kind of wonderful same plot, like all of those.
Pretty much, yeah.
The same thing.
Boy meets girl, they get separated, they come back together, and then there's
and
a
separated.
Bunch of 80s songs thrown in there in between and some they, comic and relief, and that's about the gist of it.
They get separated by a plot point that is so impressive because it was basically taken from any episode of Three's Company.
Yeah. That's true. So there it is. So let's go back to it. It's all 80s music. Eric, you knocked a bunch of it down. Why don't you just pick back up where you left off before I rudely
Well,
interrupted
okay.
You.
So basically, here's the bottom line is I went into the movie. I grew up with this kind of music.
Right.
And I went into the movie thinking, like I think a lot of other people are going to when they see it. You know what? I don't want him to ruin a bunch of my favorite songs from the 80s and do these stupid versions where everybody wears wigs and tries to pretend like they're rock stars. I don't want to see that. And you also probably don't want to see really vanilla lead actors do these kind of lame Glee American Idol versions of these songs. And I don't mean all of the Glee singers and all of the American Idol singers, but the ones
the
that
fair
are...
majority of
the,
them.
The fair majority of them, right? These kind of soulless kind of, you know, bland versions. And so that's what I went in thinking. But there's a moment right at the beginning of the film that let me know that this movie is way more clever and is going to have a lot more fun than I expected. And that is when the lead actress, Julianne Hough, H-O-U-G-H.
Huff.
Is it Hough or Hugh?
I don't know.
I thought it was Juliana Huff, but it doesn't matter.
Is it Huff?
Yeah.
It could be Huff. Anyway, she's known for
clearly
being on
prepared
Dancing in the Stars.
The blonde girl.
She was on Dancing in the Stars or Dancing on the Stars or With the Stars or whatever the crappy show is.
Sure.
And she is her name is Sherry Christian. So she is an amalgam of Oh Sherry, the Steve Perry song, and Sister Christian, the Night Ranger song, which she starts to sing on the bus as she's leafing through her Aerosmith records and other 80s hair bands. And I'm like, okay, this is pretty cheesy right off the bat, but this is what musicals do, right? That all the other people on the bus start singing Sister Christian along with her.
All Almost Famous.
Yeah, well, okay. You know what?
No, but that
just because people sang in a bus doesn't mean it was anything like Almost Famous. You're equating two moments that have nothing to do with each other. No,
but somebody tripped the Almost Famous trigger in Eric's
brain. That's true, he did. But I love Almost Famous, and I really like this movie, too. I just don't think these are comparative moments.
Okay.
So, Alan, no, I disagree with that. But moving on, I haven't even gotten to the important part. We're still trying to talk about the beginning of the film.
Get to it.
The bus driver starts singing in this low kind of a rumble, and it's just ridiculous. At first, you're like, okay, they're taking it seriously that this little girl is singing and this guy across the bus is singing, and they're all kind of blending their voices to let them know that they're behind her and go follow your dreams, girl. And then the bus driver chimes in, and you're like, okay, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they stick with that through the entire film. There's moments where in a normal musical you would think that it's okay for characters to be singing and people just joining in at random, but this movie has I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner, and it's a song that that two people are singing to each other that are clearly just lusting after each other.
That's actually one of the funniest scenes in the movie.
Oh, it's a great scene in
the
movie.
I would say that it's this is a weird piece of praise to give the movie, but it is one of the best comedically edited movies.
Yes, it's got a ton of energy.
The editing is just so funny when they in that musical number they cut back to it at one point and Tom Cruise is literally singing at her ass.
Yes,
and it's a close up shot of him just like serenading her ass.
Do you remember how it begins? This is what I was going to end my little thing with.
Go with it.
Tom Cruise is taking a piss.
Yeah.
I mean, he's at the urinal singing, I gotta take a little time.
Yeah, that's
it's like, I'm sorry, but this is more than just people kind of gingerly poking fun at something.
Also,
this
there's a really great, with the moment where Alec Baldwin and Russell Brand sing I Can't Fight This Feeling. That's
which to me
also
is
pretty
is
amazing.
Is the sequence that steals the entire movie.
It's, it is
that
one
was
of many.
The highlight of the movie for me. That and the I Want to Know What Love Is. Greatest parts of that movie.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Cruise is literally resting between the ass cheeks of a woman when he is woken up by somebody when they come in the room. I mean, they're just sublimely hilarious and weirdly kind of absurd. There's an absurd streak in this film that I don't think people will give it credit for. I've read a lot of reviews of this movie. I've been working on my print review today. I delivered the one for Kansas First News yesterday morning, which is a nice little 1 minute.
Little chunklet.
But my review right now that I'm expanding is turning into a rant. And it's basically a rant against all the people who have written these stupid...
It's one of those all you haters.
You know what?
All you haters review.
I mean, movie criticism, when all it is plot summary and a checklist. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Of who was good and who was bad and what worked and what didn't. Those movie reviews tell me nothing.
Yeah.
Those reviews have no insight and no personality. And frankly, all the ones that I've seen of Rock, not all of them, but many of them that I've seen of Rock of Ages, dismiss it for being surface value when the entire point of the movie is to be surface value.
It's all artifice.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's nothing real in this entire film except, and I will cede the floor at this point.
Okay, go for it.
Except... I am here to say that Tom Cruise's performance is so good and so funny in this movie that he actually approaches, I wrote this in my review, a maybe unintended sense of soulfulness. And that is because he's channeling this kind of weird, fake, poetic Jim Morrison kind of bullshit. And he creates this heartbreak. You can see that this is a damaged guy and you root for him, and on some weird level, despite all the crazy shit that's going on, he feels like the most real character in the entire film.
Well, he's also, out of everybody cast in the movie, he's the best at both acting and singing together. Because some people in the movie can do one or the other. Sadly, the two leads can't really do either one that well. But this is a movie that, despite having two bland lead characters, still succeeds based on the strength of a great supporting cast.
I agree.
Yeah. The strongest, like, last of the film, the strongest part was the supporting characters. The lead characters were so dull and their stories were not interesting. It was so, this is going to happen, you know it's going to happen, but the supporting characters really made the movie come together.
But the lead character's story is told with the lyrics of the songs and the order that they're put in the film. So yes, their story is naive and cliche, and we've seen it a million times before. But now let's consider the soundtrack.
But that's okay.
Well, because
and I'll agree with you. It does that. And where the film runs into trouble is if you have a gap too long where you don't where you hit between songs, where the movie just stalls.
2 hours is too long for this movie.
And some things I liked about it, I'm just going to jump in and go in because there were some things I definitely didn't like about it. The length is one of them, and it does get kind of the thing is, it's okay if the story is totally predictable. I think with a movie like this, it's just all surface value. It's okay. Because it gives them, you know, sort of a weak backbone to put these songs into play. And that's fine. But it does get kind of exhausting by the end when you know how it's going to end already. And you're just like, just get us there. It's okay. That said, some of the things that I really enjoyed about it, it does have a great self-sense of humor. The editing is really sharp. I thought the person who stole the show for me, I really did like the Russell Brand, Alec Baldwin montage, but the performance that stole it for me was Catherine Zeta-Jones plays a member of the PRMC, and she and these church ladies sing this version of Hit Me With Your Best Shot where she's like gyrating in this church, and this little old lady's playing organ, and it's actually really funny and just really sharp. And then also Bryan Cranston is in it, and he's fulfilling his contractual obligation to be in his tidy whities and everything he starts, everything that he's in, he's going to be in his underwear at some point. And so, he's able to do that again. But I don't know. I liked it way more than I thought I would, but I'm going to be honest. It's because I walked into it expecting to hate it. But
I did too, and maybe that's why I'm reacting so positively towards it after reading the other reviews of it that I think kind of missed the point. So here's an example of something that's really clever. You use the word clever. The mashups in this movie between the songs, musically, if you listen to how they put them together, there's some really ingenious stuff happening. And we should mention that Zeta-Jones and Cranston's characters do not exist in the Broadway version. They're completely made for this movie.
I didn't know
that.
And
there's some music changes as well.
Mm-hmm, there's a lot of music changes, and this is one of them. So I'm really giving credit to to Justin Theroux,
who also wrote Iron Man, Alan,
and the guys who adapted this for the scene where on one side of the street we have the church ladies all singing "We're Not Gonna Take It" by Twisted Sister, which the PMRC called Dee Snider from Twisted Sister to testify on behalf of explicit lyrics, but now you have church ladies singing "We're Not Gonna Take It," which is hilarious in its own right for a child of the 80s like myself. And then on the other side, you have cameos by Kevin Cronin, Sebastian Bach, and others, Debbie Gibson, singing "We Built This City," which at the time in the 80s, and even to this day, I would say, is virtually despised by every serious hard rock fan. And the fact that they were singing that, I mean, there's just such gleeful subversion in this film, and even on the on the little subtle moments like that.
Those two films fit together really well. I mean,
which ones?
We Built This City and We're Not Going to Take It. I mean, they just.
Oh, you mean songs?
Songs fit together really well.
I know, but here's the thing: they use the walk down at the end of the chorus of "We're Not Going to Take It," and the section of "We Built This City" that has a similar has similar notes, and they're putting them together, and then the vocals overlap on the top, and that's when you just have to sit back and go, okay, you know what, this is a lot smarter than people are going to get it credit for, because it's working on a lot of levels, and I think I am exactly the intended audience. So yes, I got all of the little inside jokes and cultural references and things like that that somebody who's younger than me might not get or somebody that's older than me might not get. Yeah. But I'll be damned. I'm excited to see it a second time.
Yeah, I recommend this movie to anybody that was like a child of the 80s or like kind of thriving in the 80s and like really into the scene, you know? Because my parents, they were into the scene, and like when they saw the trailer, they were so excited. And I kind of get it. I wasn't even alive in the 80s. I'm a 90s kid. but I was raised on 80s everything. So like I kind of got it, but I feel like anybody that was like actually in it will appreciate this movie so much more.
Well, and that said, this version of the 80s doesn't really exist.
Well, yeah.
Like this is the mythical version
it's
because
the theatrical version of yeah. the 80s. Every single 80s movie has this same kind of idea of the 80s. That's not the 80s, but
yeah.
everybody knows, everybody thinks of it as the 80s. So to some people it is the 80s, but to most it's not.
We even get the less pristine version or not quite as nostalgic look at the bad part of the 80s when the film introduces boy bands.
Well, you know, technically boy bands are a 90s thing.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I thought was really interesting.
And they're coming back now.
Yeah, that's true, right? One Direction.
One Direction.
So here's the thing, though. I've
got my
seen
tickets.
I've seen movie critics give this movie crap because it includes more than words, and there's another movie in it. That
there's a couple.
Another
that,
song. You guys yeah. keep saying song when you mean
like
movie.
What did I say?
90.
You said movie instead of song. Yeah. You guys.
Yeah. So more than words, and there's another song from later than 1987 in the film. Criticizing this movie for that. Is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
What I would tell all these people to do is go back and I want to see their reviews for Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically the same thing. We're conjuring up images of a certain time. We're not trying to say this is historically accurate. Otherwise, the guy wearing the Journey T-shirt wouldn't say to the girl, "I wrote this song last night," and then play her "Don't Stop Believin'," which they establish right away. So anybody that's bitching about that clearly wasn't paying attention.
Yeah. I love that kind of criticism. It's just like, well, they didn't even think of that. Yeah, you're right. It was a total accident.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Someone made a $70 million movie and just forgot.
Right. And at the end of it, someone went, "Oh, shit, guys. I just looked that up. It came out in 90.
Oh,
right.
God. Yeah, well, it's too late. We already shot it. So I guess we'll just have to go with it. That's dumb luck.
Another thing I wanted to mention real quick is in my review, I'm comparing the casting in this film to Starship Troopers.
Okay.
And that might
you compare everything to Starship Troopers.
That's
I love
true.
Starship Troopers.
You do love Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers is another movie that has a lot more going on than people give it credit for. And the 90210 kind of casting of that film, these fresh-faced teenagers or young people that were going to get ground up into the machine mm-hmm. of being citizens, that's the same like kind of reason that we have these two teenagers here, because we have to believe, as cheesy as it is and as cynical as we are, we have to believe that these lyrics that we've been listening to from all these songs were about something. And these two kids embody that naive kind of spirit, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not defending
just a couple of believers.
They are a couple of believers.
Star-eyed believers with rock and roll dreams,
yeah,
man.
They get exactly.
crushed.
They get crushed.
And they do get crushed.
Get
and they have to
and
reevaluate, and they come back, and we know what happens. But what I'm trying to say is that, I don't know, I guess I'm just kind of letting it off the hook again. It's like, because of the construct, it's just to have them be like a young, gritty performance from, let's say, the new Ryan Gosling or... You know, to have actors of that caliber trying to do some sort of method work in this film, that wouldn't work. And they can't be parodies either, right? Because everybody else is. They have to stay straight. They have to play it totally straight. So I don't know. I guess that's just another point I'm bringing up.
Eric Moline says, "I don't know."
Yeah,
but I mean, the first time you see
good podcast
raves, "I don't know."
The first time
about
you see
Rock of Ages.
Mary J. Blige who shows up to do a couple numbers, and she opens her mouth and sings a note, you're like, "Oh, how much better would this movie have been if the lead actress could actually
if people
sing,
could sing, you know, sing if people well. were singers first and actors second."
I think Hugh or Huff or however you want to pronounce her name, I think she's passable,
yeah.
but she's not really, she's a passable actress and she's a passable singer. She's a dancer who got cast in this movie where she does very, very little dancing, which is odd. So, and I don't think the guy's much better. So.
Yeah.
No, that guy, the guy's name,
Diego Boneta.
Diego Boneta, and it took us 20 minutes just to mention his name because he's so forgettable and interchangeable in this movie. So, I don't know. I enjoyed it way more than I thought I would. If I'm gonna give it a Rockfist rating, I would give it like, I guess I'd have to give it a minor.
Give it a minor.
Neutral.
I can't give it a neutral. That won't work.
Give it a high five.
Swiss fist it.
I can't do it. I've got to pick a side, and I think it does enough right, and it's got a good sense of humor. The other thing is, I get really tired of musicals that just have musical numbers that don't push the story forward. That's the whole point of a freaking musical. Like, you use the songs to develop and further the narrative.
You don't want the story to stop. Perform a song and then start.
It's like Rent. I mean, I hate Rent, and that's one of the reasons why.
Rent? Oh, I love Rent. Rent works like that.
Everyone has AIDS.
I love that movie. That was in my top 10 the year.
Team America.
Yeah. Trey and I were actually talking about that yesterday.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, it does do that. I mean, I have to give it a minor rock fist up. The minorest of minor recommendations, but. I mean, it's exactly what it looks like it's going to be. If it looks like a terrible, stupid idea to you, you know, it might surprise you like it surprised some of us because, I was definitely expecting to hate it. I don't have any fondness for 80s music, so it didn't, like, appeal to my sense of nostalgia at all. Like, most of those songs I kind of either regrettably know well because I've heard them from the radio, but I've, never actually gone out and bought a Foreigner album, but I don't know. I have to say a minor rock fist up. It's funny enough. Oh, and Malin Ackerman's really funny in it too. She's got a few great moments with Tom Cruise.
And we didn't even mention
she's
Paul
hilarious.
Giamatti. He's got another great supporting performance.
Yeah, he's got to be that
overlooked
sleazeball agent. He's perfect at that. So I don't know. It's definitely a minor rock fist.
Yeah,
up
I mean,
for
I
me.
Would I would definitely agree with you on that. I mean, that's where I came out. When I walked out of the theater, and that's where I am still today. I think it's a minor up, just by the strength of the music and the supporting cast. To me, this is a movie that I'm glad I saw it in the theater, but I can probably wait 3 years from now to see it on cable again. That's what this film is to me.
And yeah, I'm sure it'll probably flop, and I could see it maybe getting sort of a cult following and
that's
doing sort
exactly
of
what I was gonna
midnight
say.
Screenings and this things is, like that. Like, it's sing-alongs. It's kind of built for that.
Yeah.
kind of cheese.
I
so
think
maybe
that this is
going to
hit a nerve with some people, and it's going to be really interesting. I don't normally like talking about box office, but it is going to be really interesting to see who this movie appeals to, how many of them there are out there, and the amount that will go back for repeat viewings. Because I am the target audience. I thought it was going to suck, and I ended up liking it quite a bit. This is a solid rock fist up for me. I think it succeeds on all levels, and even the levels where I feel like criticizing it, which we all agree are the two lead performances, I let it off the hook because of what it is. So I think that it'll be interesting if this movie catches on, and I think it could be. Even in gay subculture, I think this might be something that would really catch on. So solid rock fist up for me.
Well, I'm going to say when I came out of the movie, I was more pointing towards a minor rock fist down because I went into it like, I'm going to love this. Musicals are my jam. And I did not like it when I came out of it. But having sat on it, let it ferment for a while, like, thinking on it, it's really kind of, it's hilarious, and it's so smart, and it's, I think I'm going to give it a minor rock fist up. I don't know if I can go way up, but mainly because I am so caught up in how dull and slow the main performances are, because that's what the movie is focused on, even though the side performances are so great, that's not what the main thing in the movie is, so, yeah.
That's fair.
Which is pretty surprising. I mean, we all agree that the leads do their best to kill this movie, and we all gave it a positive review. That says something about the rest of the movie that works well.
Yeah, for sure. And some of that is just, like, they didn't all the support performances, they don't really have to carry any serious weight. I mean, Cruise's character comes the closest to having an actual story. The rest of them just get to kind of occupy scenes and then move on.
And yeah, Mary J. Blige's story didn't even have a real story.
There wasn't a story there. And
she always looked angry and sad, like someone broke up with her, but you had no idea what happened.
Her dreams were shattered a long time ago. She had to harden her heart.
And that's the lesson she teaches.
Yeah, it is. And she's going to keep teaching it to every stripper that comes in there with
become a stripper,
broken
baby.
Dreams. Mm. Yeah. That's another thing we should mention is it's really funny that that stripping and being in a boy band is somehow more selling out than being in an 80s
band. And that, to be fair, being in a boy band is much worse than being a stripper.
Yeah.
Which I would agree with in real life.
I would too.
I don't know. Yeah. I know a couple strippers and they're pretty disgusting. So. The ones that I know personally.
Hopefully they don't listen to this podcast.
Well, if they do, they know who they are and they know how I feel about them. So.
All right.
I should also mention that I really enjoy divisive films, and I think this is going to be one of the most divisive of the year.
You do. That is true. That will galvanize you.
Yes.
More than anything. If there's a movie that people are kind of undecided on.
No, not undecided.
But come
some
down
hate,
on one side
some
or the
love.
Other. You are beholden to those movies. I know from experience.
I love those movies. Did you just stop? Is that what you did there?
No.
Okay.
No.
I thought you were like, I know from experience and I don't want to hear you anymore. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Yep. This is over. So there you have it. What, 30, 40 minutes on Rock of Ages?
Yeah, who knew? Who knew we could do that? So we'll be back next week. We're going to talk about Seeking a Friend at the End of the World. Do we have anything else for next
Brave.
Week? Brave. Brave, yes.
Abraham Pixar's, Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
That's also true. If I can get to that, I'm definitely going to that. So... We'll have a few.
Are you
going to
root
about.
For Abraham Lincoln? Or
I'm
going to
root for the vampires.
Trey will talk about Lola Versus. We're going to have a very packed show.
It'll be
next
a nice,
week.
Yeah, it'll be a nice, well-rounded show. You got your vampire hunters. You got your Pixar movies.
Yeah.
You got your Steve Carell, Keira Knightley indie comedy.
Yeah.
So something for everyone except for minorities and fans of documentaries. So.
And foreign films.
It's a very whitewashed podcast.
Well, there's a downer to end.
Yeah, thanks, Trevin.
I'm just saying.
This movie is the most fun thing, and you just ended the podcast on a big downer.
Well,
could all just
I'm
out
just
out
saying.
Song right now.
Right.
Yeah. Dun dun da do do dun dun
dun da da dun 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 do do do. All right, we'll see you next week.